folks that are suffering the most, and these indie voices that are quickest to disappear from the scene when financing dries up for new projects. So it has a very big economic impact in a variety of ways. With respect to, you know, new media efforts by the creative community, there are a variety of things that the creative community is engaged in. And certainly the creative community relies heavily on sites like, you know, Facebook, both to distribute and sell within Facebook some of their content, to market it and so forth. So there's absolutely no interest in shutting down any sites that operate in this legal space.
But it makes it possible. This legislation would make that possible.
It would not. Again, I would urge you, and unfortunately you don't have it on your background reading, but I would urge you to go and look at the manager's amendment for the Stop Online Piracy Act. You can go to the House Judiciary Committee website, and there's a link to it. If you go to the issues drop-down menu and hit rogue sites, you can get to the text of the amendments. And
so, you know, what's the club that's over these American firms then, if not that kind of intervention? What's your leverage to get them to stop representing or, you know, including these foreign websites where you say piracy is going on?
Sorry, I'm not following your question. What's the
whole
what's
point
the approach
here,
that the bills take?
How would they stop Google or Twitter or anybody else from or YouTube from permitting or offering access to these websites? What's your leverage?
Right. The bills would establish a process by which a case could be brought by the attorney general or by an individual copyright owner that's been harmed by infringement.
With what threat to the American web company?
We're not talking about American web companies.
Well, yes,
to
you
begin
are.
With.
Help me out here, Marvin.
What you're asking is, what if Google and Facebook and Twitter and all of the startups that are also engaged in this issue, like Engine Advocacy and other groups, what if they ignored the orders? That's what the question is. And you're suggesting there's no effect on American companies.
The federal district courts have the right to enforce orders that they issue. So, yes, if Google thumbed its nose at an order that was issued to it to stop directing people to infringing sites or to stop selling advertising against infringing sites,
then what?
There could be a federal remedy from the federal court.
Like
contempt
what?
Of court,
like shutting it down.
A contempt of court remedy.
Okay,
no,
so
contempt of court is the remedy that applies in civil cases.
And could that not lead to a shutdown or a major financial punishment, fine here?
The court would select the remedy.
So it seems disingenuous to say that there's no leverage over American companies. You've just named it right there. Maurice in Chelsea, Massachusetts.
Right.
You're on the air,
Maurice. We're looking at you're mixing apples and oranges
here. I don't
think
so.
I'm not saying that we're not engaging American companies in solving the problem. I'm saying the sites that we are directing the bill's provisions at are sites abroad that are foreign sites that are engaged and operated primarily to distribute infringing goods and counterfeit goods.
Yeah,
it's
come on.
A
I mean, but it goes
question
through
entirely
America,
to say that you have to
American
work with
sites.
American partners. That's the only way you get access.
Exactly.
And
that's all I'm trying to point out. Let me get a caller here. Maurice in Chelsea, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Maurice.
Yeah, my concern is right in line with what you're talking about. I have an issue with the way the bill, at least as of yesterday, defined foreign Internet sites.
Mm-hmm.
Internet companies are dynamic and global. They can have servers in one country, employees in multiple countries. To me, it's an issue with the lawmakers and their extreme age makes it difficult for them to understand how the Internet really works, in my opinion. If you've ever tried to explain to your grandparents how the Internet works, I don't know if you've ever gone through that exercise, but it can be difficult. I can take a response off the air, but the foreign site definition is currently very vague, and I think it could be abused.
Marvin, what about it? Do you see room for abuse there, or is there a bright line?
No, he's right. It's very vague. It's even overbroad. And he points to two things that are very interesting here. One is the implicit xenophobia of we're only going after these that commercial, that dark foreign people who are stealing American goods. And the second thing is that Congress doesn't seem to understand the internet very well. I worked on an issue called net neutrality for many years, and it was very difficult to get congressmen to understand the internet. And during the hearing on the House side for SOPA, there were lots of congressmen supporting SOPA who kept saying, "I don't understand the internet, but I'm not an internet nerd, but." And pontificating on things they'd heard from lobbyists.
But isn't it the case, Marvin, that a lot of the pirates do, in fact, retreat overseas because then they're further away from the reach of American law as it currently stands?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true, and there's a problem. The question is, if you look at the fact of piracy, the same way you might look at the fact as a businessman of employee theft or some other theft, you've got to ask yourself, how do I deal with this fact? Do I engage in litigation? Do I engage in lobbying and an untargeted bill that I try to roll over the internet community? Or do I address a service problem? A lot of people, two callers ago, mentioned that a lot of people don't use pirated sites. They use iTunes, right? Because it's also a service problem. Lots of people can get content more easily from pirated sites than from legitimate sites. And legitimate sites could respond with technologies that make it easier, provide better service for people to actually get the content they want. And I understand that if you're a copyright holder, you might not want to have to respond to the fact there's piracy by changing your business model, but it actually beats the other options of trying to lobby censorship or trying to litigate against every one of these sites.
Peter in Nashville. Peter, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm a published author myself, and I'd like to point out that the issue here is not copyright. The issue is the horse-drawn buggy manufacturers trying to sue the automobile manufacturers to get them off the road to protect the buggy market. The media companies are trying to protect an old-fashioned, outdated business model, as others have pointed out. This bill is not about copyright. It's about companies trying to protect their revenue stream. And the sooner that we wake up and recognize that, the sooner we might get to the truth of what the argument's all about.
But what about your fellow Nashville caller, Peter, who's a songwriter, who said, you know, he's got a limited number of ways, I suppose, to make money off those songs and these people to pay for them, and he sees them, to his eye, stolen all over the world. What about that?
Sure, but look at the new business models opening up. There's an author who's just become a million seller on Amazon through selling his books at 99 cents on Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And by pricing them at 99 cents, he's got such an incredible market opening up with people who would never have bought his stuff that he's just made $300,000 in royalties in less than a year, I think it was. He's changed his marketing approach and his pricing to take advantage of a new technology, and as a result, he's doing very nicely, thank you.
So don't try to lock us down in old ways that don't work in this era. We've got it. Norwich, Connecticut. Nick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Nick.
Hi, John. Thanks. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that these incredibly rich Hollywood moguls and incredibly rich Rupert Murdochs of this world run to daddy for some regulations when they are too cheap to create a technological fix that will, in fact, solve the problem. Why do we have to have censorship when all they have to do is to make it impossible to copy their stuff without a key that can be provided for a cost?
Marvin, is that really out there? It would be lovely, but is there really a technological answer to this, or is there always a workaround if you're a determined pirate?
So I'm not a technologist, but what I've noticed is that consumers don't really like digital rights management. Like if you look at iTunes, for many years there were lots of digital rights management and it kept loosening up. And so there's a balance for Hollywood between what users want and how they can lock down the files. But the interesting thing is, you know, if you make content available, even if it's not encrypted and locked down, people will choose legal alternatives. They've chosen iTunes. They've chosen Netflix.
Sandra, you can hear in the feedback, I'm sure you've heard it all over the place. It's here today as we speak. People just not trusting a lot of big media producers to keep freedom and innovation in mind as they look out for their own interests here. That sort of lack of faith that they'll try and keep the innovative spirit of the internet alive as they try to lock down the edges. That's got to be a problem when you get into the legislative arena and you get a big spotlight on it.
Well, I think it is unfortunate that that's the perception. The people that I speak to on a daily basis are individual artists and creators across the country, and there are at least 11 million people all across the United States.
Plus News Corporation, Walt Disney Corp, Time Warner, Universal. These are all your clients, Viacom.
They are indeed members of the organization, but as I said, we also have a strong grassroots network of people who are individual artists and creators, who are indie filmmakers, who are authors who are photographers, so on and so forth, songwriters. These are the people that are impacted the most by piracy.
A month ago, you must have thought this was a done deal. Is it out the window now? Where do you think we're going to end up here, Sandra?
I don't think it's out the window now, and I didn't think it was a done deal a month ago. I think it's been a long process considering the bills. There have been various comments made by Marvin today that, you know, it's a rush process trying to roll the tech companies. And that's simply incorrect. There have been versions of these bills pending before the Senate for 2 years now, and in the House. There have been, you know, hearings and markups and amendments offered to
the bills to try and address all
the concerns
in
that people
have.
Got a different kind of attention right now. Marvin, what's the bottom line thing that you see at stake here? We've got 20 seconds.
The bottom line at stake is whether or not the public will be able to convince Congress to keep the internet open and free and to address this problem without sacrificing the internet. And so hopefully Americans call their congressmen today and their senators.
Well, they're the two sides, and you can see just how fierce the interests are when they get in this arena. Marvin Amori with the New America Foundation's Open Technology Initiative joining us today from Washington. Thank you, Marvin.
Thank you, Tom.
Sandra A. Starrs, Executive Director of the Copyright Alliance Advocacy Group, representing lots of individual artists, plus the Motion Picture Association of America, NBC Universal News Corp, and right on down. Sandra, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.